Welcome, everyone, to episode 431 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we unfortunately have to talk about a number of injuries and how they're shaking up the 2021 title race. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is someone who is not surrounded by 7 million cicadas, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It is going well. So there are a lot of bugs having sex around you right now.
There sure are. Apparently someone noticed this on our Facebook page. So yes, I should have prefaced the last couple episodes actually by saying as someone who lives on the Eastern Seaboard right now, unfortunately, we are in the one in every 17 year wave of billions of freaking cicadas everywhere. So yes, I'm sorry in advance, but you will probably be hearing them for the next. Hopefully they go die soon, but yeah, hopefully. If not, you're going to be hearing some extra background noise for the next few weeks. So just bear with us there.
It's pretty fascinating. Like 17 years, you say?
Yeah.
So they're in the ground for 17 years?
Yeah.
Then they come out to have sex and then they die.
Yeah, and in theory, their lifespan is only 2 weeks, but I guess they didn't all come out at the same time. But I'm already seeing a number of dead ones, but there are still plenty of alive ones, as you can hear. And if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen me tweet a couple pictures of the infestation in my backyard. So, I was taking my dog for a walk earlier, and we crossed this one bush, and it was just absolutely covered, and he, being an absolute idiot, decides to like throw his entire body in there. So I don't want to spend any time outside until mid-June at least. Mort, we have a lot, unfortunately, of injuries to talk about. We've already hit on Chris Paul, but I want to actually start with Lakers Suns because we have game 5 tonight. It comes out after game 4 that Monty Williams initially planned to sit Chris Paul because of this shoulder injury they suffered in game 1. He obviously did not look like his old, his typical self in games 2 and 3. And Chris Paul talked him out of it. Williams after the game said, Chris Paul just said, "Coach, let me start. If you don't think I'm looking like I normally do, then take me out. We'll have to go in a different direction." To Chris's credit, he was fantastic in game 4, which was awesome to see. Unfortunately, we get another notable injury, and that's Anthony Davis in that game. Goes down with a groin injury, leaves before halftime, I believe. He is listed as questionable, but according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, he is not expected to play in this game. So, Mort, the Suns take advantage of Davis's absence, not the series up at 2-2. They're now heading back to Phoenix for Game 5, presumably. We're not going to see Anthony Davis in this game. How are you feeling if you're a Lakers fan?
No, I'm feeling a little bit skeptical here because one thing is, you always have this idea that when someone is out but LeBron is healthy, that he just goes prime LeBron on you, and there's supposedly this mental security blanket of that. But LeBron himself hasn't really set the world on fire this series. He still looks... Maybe it's just me imagining things, but he still looks at times a little bit weird in his movement. Now, I know that he had that huge dunk in game 4 where he looked like himself at age 18 or something. But that I don't think that's a fair representative of how he's looked like when he's moving laterally. It seems like he's a little bit wobbly. I don't know. But at the same time, I also feel wrong for doubting LeBron. We've been out down that road, and that really never seems to pan out. So if I'm a Lakers fan, I'm skeptical but slightly optimistic about the prospect of seeing one of those all-time LeBron games. But I'm also not going into this game knowing, I have this in the back by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, LeBron said after the game, I believe, that he knows, you know, it even more is going to fall on him. And he said he had some quote about, like, my shoulders are this broad for a reason or something like that. So he knows, you know, this could be an all-timer. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to wonder, you know, are we looking at the Suns taking a 3-2 lead tonight and heading back to Staples Center in Game 6, where it sounds like there is optimism if the series, well, the series is going six games at least. This is from Dave McMenamin of ESPN, and he's citing Woj here as well. You know, McMenamin said there was pessimism surrounding his availability for Tuesday's contest. A return for Game 6 on Thursday is possible. So, you know, I would think, especially if the Lakers lose tonight, there will be an extra motivation for him to return to Game 6. Maybe if if they win tonight, go back home, they say, let's get him a couple more days of rest and we can save him for Game 7 if we need to. But yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. So if AD does not play tonight as expected, what would you do if you're Frank Vogel? Who would you start in his place? Kyle Kuzma started the second half of Game 4. Would you stick with Kuzma? Would you go Markieff Morris? Or would you, you know, kind of downsize and do LeBron at the 4 and surround him with a couple shooters?
Yeah, that last one, I think LeBron is a 4. So, absolutely. I think that would be the best part. The thing is, though, is that going to be enough? Because, let's flip it around. If you're asking me, like, what should the Suns do, which I am imagining that you would be asking me in a couple minutes anyway, This is one of those times where I wouldn't care about the supporting staff whatsoever. Yeah. Like, I would just, I'm not going to, like, do the whole Luka thing where, oh, no, play him for the pass. Like, no, I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. Like, let everyone else beat me if I'm the Suns. That's fine. I just want to see doubles on LeBron from, like, the opening tip. LeBron James should not have a night where he shoots over 50% from the field. He should barely have one where he shoots over 40. This is the type of defensive performance they need to put on him. They need to shut him down to the best of their ability. And if that means a triple team at times, if he comes in near the post, I'm good with that too. Let LA's shooters or secondary or tertiary guys beat you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what's tricky for the Lakers is that they have so many bigs, but they are kind of light in terms of reliable wing depth, especially... Yeah. You know, KCP missed Game 4. It sounds like he should be back tonight. So you figure he's going to move Matthews from the starting lineup. But, you know, you could do Schroeder, KCP, Matthews, LeBron, Drummond. That's one option. Or you could, you know, put Matthews back on the bench, go with Kuzma or Morris, whoever. I agree with you, hypothetically. I like the LeBron at the 4 and 2 shooters and then Schroeder and Drummond or Marc Gasol, whoever. That conceptually seems to make the most sense, but at the same time, that leaves you pretty thin in terms of guard play off the bench. You have Caruso, you have Ben McLemore, but otherwise you have, again, Markieff Morris, Kuzma, Marc Gasol, Montrezl Harrell. Like, most of your bench guys are bigs. So I wonder if Vogel, because of that, goes Kuzma in place of Davis, and then if he needs to pivot at some point during the game and we get more LeBron at the 4 as the game goes on, maybe that's the play.
Yeah. I that could be a play. I mean, honestly, I don't think positions really... like, I know I said that LeBron, I like him at the 4. What I mean by that is I want him flanked with perimeter players. Mm-hmm. And I think your point is perfectly reasonable. Like, the depth that the Lakers have are big men. So if you want to get them in there, what do? Well, you move LeBron down to, like, sort of a wing. But I just don't think that's the play. I mean, because you're not getting shooting with Harrell. You're not getting shooting with Drummond. You're getting inconsistent shooting with Kuzma at best. Like, I just don't know if that's the play. Or I will like, if you put a gun to my head and you asked me, like, what would you rather have? LeBron playing the 4 or the 5 even, just a big position, and then spending most of his minutes alongside him is Ben McLemore? Or do you want me to see LeBron shifted out to wing position and then have Montrezl Harrell, like, play pick and roll with him? I would go McLemore all day long for the spacing luxury that it provides them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's also the question of, you know, DeAndre Ayton has been so dominant in this series. Without Anthony Davis, that is one less big piece to worry about from a defensive perspective. I feel like DeAndre Ayton is going to absolutely eat tonight. Yes. And, you know, the best hope for the Lakers is that Marc Gasol didn't play at all in game one, wasn't super effective, didn't really make a huge impact in games two or three. Game four was his best game of the series by far. He played 23 minutes, had 12 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 1 steal, 3 threes. So do you think, knowing you're not going to have, you know, AD, who was really good in games two and three, do you lean more heavily on Gasol rather than Drummond as your primary five to combat Ayton?
So here's the thing, right? We know that Gasol has not produced a whole ton this year. Mm-hmm. One game isn't going to convince me that this is his norm now.
Yeah.
So I would almost do that. I would almost attack this in the same way that Chris Paul wanted to attack that issue in game four, where, yeah, sure, you can start him and you can see how he fares over the first couple of minutes. And if Mark isn't having a good game, you probably need to make a switch somewhat quickly. But if he starts off right, plays great positional defense, if he hits a shot or two, fine. Like, run him for as long as he can against Ayton, because I do think from a post perspective, like from a post defensive perspective, rather, he is the best option. But he also needs to be contributing offensively, because if he's not, the Lakers just won't have enough firepower offensively. And as we say on this podcast very often, Brian, it's still scoring that's the name of the game. If you don't win, if you don't score more than your opponent. So you just cannot have a game where Marc Gasol is inefficient from offense or just not participating offensively. You need to have the two-way Marc Gasol if you have any hopes of winning this one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they held the Suns to 99 in game one and 100 in game four. Realistically, especially given the inflated scoring totals this year, you would expect to win both of those games, and they did not, because they mustered only 90 in game one and 92 in game four. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to need, you know, Schroeder can't go 3 of 13 again.
Right.
Really, Gasol was like, the Gasol and LeBron were the only two who had really good games in game four. And, you know, losing a big piece like Drummond, or like Anthony Davis, in the middle of the game can affect your game plan. Because, again, clearly in games two and three, they were running a lot through AD as the primary scorer. That was one of the things we said coming into the series, is that the Suns didn't have a good counter for him. They took advantage of that after he had a miserable game one. Now you have to kind of go back to the drawing board. So at least they've had some time now to say, okay, we're not expecting to have Anthony Davis in game five. Who are we going to go to in his place? But it's going to be fascinating to see. And I am really regretting not going with my heart instead of my brain and picking the Suns in this series. Because I mean, if we get the version of Chris Paul that played in game four, if we see that tonight, I think the Suns do go up 3-2.
Yeah.
And at that point, I mean, I know, God willing, Chris Paul will not get hurt again. That's the last thing we want when they go up 3-2 in a series in game five. But I don't know, man. I think the Suns team has a very legit shot of sending the defending champs home in round one.
This is a different tone than the one you brought in our DM conversation the other day, where you were like, I don't know, man, this smells like a fiver.
I was very sad when I saw broken Chris Paul, but he recovered very quickly.
He did. He did. This has been a great series, and I think it's so unfortunate that it got hampered by injuries. But and this is going to sound almost sadistic, but it almost adds to the intrigue right now that we've had these one injury on each side. If you catch my drift, like, it's almost even the odds, and it's disgusting to describe it that way. If you catch my drift, like, obviously you want both teams to be fully healthy, but for the sake of the series, like, we saw just what great a year the Suns were having, and then for them to, in game freaking one, like, almost look like, oh yeah, we're going to be out of our starting point guard for the rest of our all-star point guard, and that would have completely ruined the series. And then for them to bounce back, and then AD is out, it feels like they're a little bit more balanced now. And I really hope AD, though, comes back for game six. So don't mistake this as me, like, supporting an Anthony Davis injury. By no means that's the case. But this smells like a 7-gamer now. It feels like this is going to go the distance, which is extremely exciting. And now this has just been a fascinating series from start to finish, I think. And it's been DeAndre Ayton's coming out party offensively, which I've been waiting for. And like you said, he's going to eat tonight, I think. If Marc Gasol can't handle him, nobody can. I mean, Andre Drummond is not going to stop him. Montrezl Harrell certainly is not going to stop him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the question for me, Brian, going into tonight, Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be smelling blood with AD out, right?
Well, that, I mean, you would think he would have been smelling blood with KCP out in game four. And you know, he was fine, but I don't think it was a great Devin Booker game by, five of 14, 5 turnovers, only 17 points. Like, luckily, it was just Jay Crowder played probably his best game of the series at a perfect time, and you get more out of Chris Paul. Ayton's been great. You know, Mikal Bridges hits a couple of big threes as well. Yeah. So it's been a well-rounded effort from the Suns. Like, I think from a team perspective, the Suns have played better than the Lakers, but this is the beauty of having LeBron James and Anthony Davis. It still might not matter. So I'm fascinated to see how this series plays out. And like you, yes, I hope we do get to see Anthony Davis return for game 6, because again, the playoffs are just more fun when everyone stays healthy. And unfortunately, as we've already seen in round 1, that just is not the case right now.
If this goes 7, it would be fantastic if both Chris Paul and Anthony Davis are, well, it's the playoffs, they can't be 100%, but as close as they possibly can to be 100%. That would be a great game 7 matchup.
So let's go to the other game that we have. This one is tomorrow, I believe. Dallas Clippers. Last time we recorded, the Mavericks had started. They stole both games at home from the Clippers, and we were ready to pound the panic button for the Clippers. Yeah. Clippers then come back and steal 2 from the Mavericks. So we are now knotted up at 2 games apiece going back to L.A. And again, injuries are at least one of the big stories here. Luka Doncic has a cervical strain. He played through it in game 4. And he tried to downplay the impact, not blaming it for the reason he struggled. But he did say this quote afterward: "The pain is like neck and then the nerve down. I don't really know how to explain that. It felt way better today than morning than yesterday. I'll just keep doing massages, ice it down, and be ready for Wednesday." So Woj said the neck strain is already being described as improved on Monday. So hopefully we do get to see, as you said, he's not going to be 100%, but something close to it for Wednesday. But how do you see this series now playing out? I'm guessing your hand is off the panic button for the Clippers and now maybe slamming it for the Mavericks. Yeah.
This is, look, I've seen every game of this series and I watched it very intently, and because I'm a big personal fan of both Luka Doncic and Kawhi Leonard, so this was a dream first round matchup for me as an NBA observer. Luka did not at all look like his usual self last game, even in game 3. He was fantastic, don't get me wrong, but there were moments where you could sort of see where he went, he's not moving as good at the end of the, I think it was the end of the third quarter. But game 4 was just, that was a nightmare. And then a subplot that's developed is his free throw shooting. I'm not really sure how to describe this. He's been horrific, shooting 40% from the free throw line. And it is in his head right now. So we are looking at 2 components that really aren't working on him, which is his body and his mind. That's not a great combination in a playoff setting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very curious to see if he's physically healthy now. If he goes into this game and goes, you know what, I'm ready, I'm physically ready, then I want to see how he responds to free throws. Then I want to see him get to the line like 15 times and knock down 14 of them. I mean, he has to have that type of night. But there's no doubt that right now the Clippers are in the driving seat. We need to talk about Kawhi. I feel I've said that like 5 times this year on this podcast. But
only 5?
More than 5, probably. But you have to agree with me on this one. Like 33 points per game. 8.5 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting almost 63% from the field over these 4 games. 47.6% from downtown and almost 88% from the free throw line. Only 2 turnovers per game. Kawhi Leonard has been playing MVP basketball this series.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll look back at this series and say it was decided in the first quarter of Game 3. Because the Mavericks got off to a ridiculous start. I forget the exact numbers, but it was like, I think they were, you know, they were up double digits very, very early.
Yeah, I think it was 19 points they were up. I
think. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, they, let me, I'm double checking here. They got, yeah, you're right. They were up 30-11 with 4 minutes and 38 seconds left in the first quarter. And it looked like they were about to run the Clippers out of the gym. And if you're down 3-0 like that going into a game 4 at home, it, you know, we're probably breaking out the brooms at that point. But the Clippers withstood that run, narrowed the lead down to 34-31 at the end of the first quarter, and you could kind of just see that they got their confidence back. Like, that was their gut check moment. Are we really going out like this, or are we going to rally around the troops and band together and, you know, play the basketball that we've been playing all year? And yeah, to your point, I mean, Kawhi and Paul George both. Yeah. I mean, they really fueled a lot of that run. Like, it, you know, Kawhi hits a 10-foot jumper, he makes another shot. Kawhi hits a 3-pointer, then Paul George hits a layup, then Paul George hits a 3-pointer. You know, they're responsible for all but 2 points in that run where you go from 30-11 to 30-25, and that's what you want from your 2 stars. I mean, that's what we did not see out of Paul George in the playoffs last year. So it's been great to see both of those guys delivering. But yeah, no one should doubt Kawhi's credentials. I don't think it was that. I mean, it's, they just didn't have a good answer for Luka defensively these first couple games. Oh,
no,
but
no, it wasn't. I'm not saying that it was like with the Kawhi stuff. I understand people think he's great, but at the same time, I mean, we saw people like, look, that leg is not the same. Like, he was better when he was in Toronto. He was all like, it's not major doubt, but it's this sneaking doubt that like comes in now, and he's just closed that off. Like, he's just completely shut that off. That's what I'm trying to say. I mean, again, like, I was there during our very many awards pods, like, and I said this guy needs at least consideration in the MVP debate, and in the national media we didn't hear a whole lot of Kawhi talk. I think that's fair to say. I think maybe we should have. And right now, he's like pointing his finger up and said, yeah, yeah, probably should have.
So going into game 5, how do you see the rest of this series playing out? Assuming, you know, Luka, we see a better version of him than we saw in game 4.
Honestly, I think it's difficult regardless because the Clippers started listening to us.
Yeah.
They really did. They did exactly what we've been talking about. They have begun not really doubling on Luka a whole lot. They've actually started switching on to the right players onto him. Like, they start. They had Marcus Morris playing extended minutes, and I think he even started in game... Nicholas Batum, of course, started in place of Subac. And then you kind of saw that Marcus Morris got switched to center. That was my point. It's late here, Brian. It's midnight. But that was what I was asking for. I was asking for Marcus Morris to play the big spot instead of Subac because he's easier to switch over if you wanted to switch. They tried their damnedest not to, but if they did, you at least had a wing defender in that capacity on Luka. Right. And they also started going both under and over screens a little bit here and there. And then offensively, they did what I've been asking them to do as well. They just started driving. They just started getting to the basket a lot more. And because they're following that game plan, they're right now on a 2-game winning streak and looking really, really potent. So if they keep this up, I really don't have any reason to believe the Mavs can bounce back from this unless Luka has an all-timer, and which he might. I don't know. But that's what it would take at this point because it seemed like they just figured out the defense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. you know, Kristaps, I think, is going to be a big story coming out of this series, but he's just not the type of player. Yes, he's 7'3", but he is not the type of player who's going to, like, or who you should be posting up a ton against smaller defenders and having him generate offense that way. That's just not his game. But the Clippers are taking advantage of that in downsizing. Like, they aren't risking. Sure, he can shoot over you, but he's still going to shoot mostly mid-range and long-range shots. You know, he's not going to get a bunch of bunnies near the basket. So they figured something out there. And yeah, I mean, it's a testament to Ty Lue that he was willing to try something new like that. You know, because it's certainly has changed the complexion of this series. And now, yeah, like you, my hand is so far off of the panic button for the Clippers at this point. You know, I'm almost mentally assuming they're through to the next round. It's hard to see the Mavericks coming back from this.
It is. And to your point about Kristaps, I don't remember which guard it was. Was it Reggie Jackson, Patrick Beverley, or Rajon Rondo who suddenly guarded Kristaps in the post? And then instead of Kristaps going in, like, aggressive back down, he, like, stopped from 8 feet and did a turnaround jump shot that missed? I don't remember who that player was who guarded him. It was one of those three. And I just went, you have got to be bleeping kidding me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... Again, that's probably a discussion for another time. We can save that for the by Felicia for the Mavericks.
Right.
You know, is this version of Kristaps here to stay, or are we going to see a better version now, you know, next year when he's further removed from that injury? We got a good Kristaps game in game two. And, you know, this was an efficient game. Like, just looking at the box score, you wouldn't really tell that Kristaps struggled. 18 points on 7 of 12 shooting. But, yeah, if you can't take advantage of the mismatches that the Clippers are creating by downsizing, playing a guy who is 6 inches smaller than you at center, you're putting your team in a really tough situation.
I was curious about something, so I started going back to watching Kristaps in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just highlight packages. I went back and found a couple old games, and then I just kind of breezed through to some of his shooting possessions and just offensive possessions. He played differently.
Yeah,
like he played a lot differently. I wonder if the ACL tear had more of a long term effect that we want to, like, acknowledge, because he was slashing the hell out of that ball in New York. And he's just not now.
So, from a Mavericks perspective, assuming the Clippers stay with the same starting five, would you keep your starting five with Kristaps and Maxi Kleba in the starting lineup? Or would you also try to match fire, downsizing fire with downsizing fire, and, you know, put in, I guess, Josh Richardson's your best option?
Yeah, Jalen Brunson to get some offense going early. But the thing is, like, then you've got to move Luka a little bit off. And then what do you do with your ball handling off the bench? Yeah, it's a really good question, Brian. I honestly don't know. I wouldn't start him, but I do think it's time to break out Boban again. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did penalize them for trying to go too small, and I do think at some point the whole pentagon can swing, because you can get someone in who can take advantage of other teams going small. Boban can't, because he's 8'11". I wouldn't start him, though. I think I would start Kleba and Porzingis still, but I would make sure that I have space in my rotation to get Boban in there to get some touches. And then I would try to make a concerted effort in giving Jalen Brunson more minutes off the bench, because he's at less than 20 minutes per game. He's too good for that. I think you need to play him 30 in the next one, at the least. And then, like, you brought up Josh Richardson, so you got to help me out here. What the hell do we make of him at this point?
I don't know, man. I mean, in theory, at least he could give you another wing option to throw it. Kawhi or Paul George, but I don't know if it's going to make a difference either way.
He lost a lot of money this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, from what I've heard, there are Mavericks fans who are afraid that he's going to pick up his player option, which is like $11 million.
Yeah.
which would have been unthinkable even a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, look, the guy is averaging 18 minutes per game right now. He is essentially your eighth man. This was a guy who, back in the day when he was in Miami, was like the number one guy on the team.
Yeah. That was when, not a great Miami team when was, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, this is the guy who you trade Seth Curry for.
Right.
And now, I mean, yeah, it's... That trade has not panned out as well for the Mavericks.
I hated it.
Sixers.
Yeah. I hated it at the time. I told you that. I hate it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Sixers, Mort, that is the other big injury we need to hit on. Joel Embiid leaves game four Monday night with what looked like a back injury. Like, he was grabbing kind of at his tailbone. He, you know, he goes up for a layup. Robin Lopez blocks it, and he lands hard and seemed to be grabbing his back. But he stayed in for a couple extra minutes, then leaves the game, goes back to the locker room, gets ruled out at halftime with right knee soreness. We just found out from Woj that the Sixers have listed him as doubtful for game five. There is not much clarity beyond that.
I'm seeing the tweet as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It just says he had an MRI on his right knee today, and he's expected to be evaluated further in the next day. So, very unclear whether he will be. I mean, I think we can assume he's not going to play in game five, most likely.
Yeah.
Unclear whether he will be available for the remainder of the series if the Wizards win again tomorrow, and then unclear what his availability is moving forward. So, first question is, Mort, Embiid can't play tomorrow. Do you think the Sixers should still be able to close out the Wizards tomorrow night at home?
Obviously.
Well, I mean, they lost last night without him.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that was, I don't know what to call it. I don't want to say it was a fluke because they can't fight. I mean, the Washington Wizards is not a team that gives up, but the Sixers are just too damn talented. I think they can do that. Like, this is one of those games where, I'm going to bring it back again, without Embiid, now you can't have that excuse, Ben, to not score. Now I want to see you go for 30 or 40.
That is certainly one of the narratives that came up a lot after the game. Also, you know, the Wizards went hack a Ben in the first quarter, which was just amazingly cowardly lion of Scott Brooks, but also in the fourth quarter, you know, right before that 2 minute mark where you can't go with it, where it's not a viable strategy anymore. And, you know, after the game, Doc Rivers defended Ben and got, actually, that was the most testy I've ever seen him in a post game press conference this year with the Sixers, because he faced a lot of questions about, like, one person asked, did you, like, consider pulling Ben out till that 2 minute mark? It was like, consider pulling out Ben Simmons? No, I'm not going to take that suggestion.
Yeah.
And then later, you know, he said, like, I don't understand why people are harping on everything he can't do, focus on everything he can do. He's really special, blah, blah, blah. You can meet in the middle. Like, yeah. Ben Simmons needs to improve as a free throw shooter. He needs to improve his overall offensive game. He's also an immensely talented player. And no, he's not the type of guy who you should just bench because he's going to get hacked a couple times. You know,
he can't score.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think that's kind of the question going into game five for me is, what does Doc do? Who does he replace Embiid with? When Embiid's gotten hurt throughout the regular season, he typically went Mike Scott at the five.
Yeah.
Please, God, do not... Like, I do not want to see Mike Scott in non-garbage time minutes. I enjoyed Mike Scott in game three because they were up like 30 points and it was fine. I just don't think that's the way to go. He has typically done that to keep Dwight Howard coming off the bench where he likes his chemistry with that second unit.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see if Dwight moves into the starting lineup tomorrow night to counter... You know, the Wizards have three traditional centers in Alex Len, Daniel Gafford, and Robin Lopez. Gafford started, and Robin Lopez scored a ton off the bench for them. Yeah, 8 of 11, 16 points on 8 of 11 shooting, almost all of which came on those ugly-ass hook shots.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Dwight has more of a role in this series than he will in down the line. we'll see, again, depending on Embiid's availability. I think the one thing working in the Sixers' favor, especially if they are going to rely more on Dwight, is that Davis Bertans suffered a calf injury.
Yeah.
He is out 4 to 6 weeks, so he's going to miss the rest of the series. So that was the first
he's
going to
miss the rest of the season, Brian.
Yes. Hopefully. The first big adjustment the Wizards made was moving him into the starting lineup in Game 3 in place of Howell Neto. Last night, they moved Gafford ahead of Len in the starting lineup. Gafford played well, but did get into early foul trouble because of Embiid. Not having Embiid, you know, he was able to avoid... He picked up two early ones, and he finished with only three. Yeah. So... like, I agree with you. The Sixers have the talent to close this thing out, but this is where Doc is going to earn his money. How he adjusts to being without Embiid, what he did in the regular season, I don't know if that's the answer here. I do not want to see 30 minutes of Mike Scott at center. I want to see more Dwight Howard, but I'd also like to see some non-conventional Ben Simmons at the five lineups play. You know, Tyrese Maxey.
You said that. I didn't say that because last time I said that, I got trolled on Twitter by Sixers fans for going back to that old narrative of Ben Simmons at center. Are you reviving that right now, or like what?
They tried it last night. I don't think it worked because Ben was in foul trouble the whole time.
No, yeah, I know they tried it, but I'm thinking you are insinuating that he should start at center, right?
I mean, I would like to see lineups with him at center.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you were like, you know, doing the whole 1980 Magic Johnson replacing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like just go nuts.
I mean, if that's like, I think I would much rather see Ben Simmons start at center and put probably Thibault in the starting lineup or Maxey or even George Hill than I would Mike Scott starting and playing 30 minutes.
Well, okay. Well, see, because I was going in a different direction because I kind of wanted to avoid Simmons at the center because every time I bring it up, Sixers fans seem to go nuts on me.
Yeah.
But I wanted to try something else with Tobias Harris at the five.
Okay, interesting.
And just go small and then Thibault in for defensive purposes.
Yeah.
And then just ask them to run the hell out of that Washington crew.
Yeah. I mean, Thibault, I guess the advantage here is that Thibault could put Bradley Beal in jail, and that would free up Ben Simmons defensively, where he's been doing a pretty good job on Beal for most of the series. But yeah, you can't, especially with Embiid out, you know, Embiid plays 11 minutes in game 4, Simmons only plays 25 because he was in foul trouble. You cannot risk Ben Simmons being in foul trouble if Embiid is also out. So I do think there is some, I think putting Thibault in for defensive purposes, put him on Beal. Keep Danny Green on Russell Westbrook because Westbrook is just taking the bait every time. Mm. You've hit 3 of 19.
I know. Yeah, that's not shocking.
It was. I mean, I saw Sam Vecenie of The Athletic say, you know, he tweeted a screenshot of Westbrook's line and said it should be put in the Louvre because he had 19 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists in a game that they won. 3 of 19 from the field. Just, like every time he shoots a jumper, it's to the Sixers' advantage.
Of course. He's not a strong shooter. That's never been his MO. By the way, I am proud of you for not suggesting that Paul Reed should start at center.
I know a lot of Sixers Twitter wants B-Bo Paul to get more minutes. I don't quite think he's ready, but I mean, ultimately, when we do the Sixers by Felicia, I think this does underscore you can't only have one reliable backup for Embiid. Like when they miss Tony Bradley right now, which is wild to say. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have made that trade because George Hill has been fantastic in this series, and I think he's going to be very valuable to them throughout this playoff run. But they can't go into next season thinking, all right, you know, maybe they re-signed Dwight for the minimum and he's been good for them. That's fine. Right. They can't go in thinking we're going to just like dick around with Mike Scott at the center lineups. Like maybe Paul Reed grows into that and they don't have to worry about it. But yes, you have to bake in the assumption Joel Embiid's probably going to miss at least 15 to 20 games during the regular season. And God forbid he misses time in the playoffs. You don't want to be facing a situation like this where it's like, well, we don't have a ton of great options, but we're just going to piece something together and hope it works.
So what I'm hearing you say is you miss the days of Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, and Rashawn Holmes.
I miss three of those four, yes. Yeah. What do you think the Wizards do without Bertans? Do we go back to Howell Neto being in the starting lineup in his place?
I don't. Do they care at this point?
I mean, they're still trying. Like they got blown out.
I'm being unnecessarily harsh. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just I really think this is one of those situations where you just have to kind of accept you're not going to make it out of here. Honestly, it's a good question. First and foremost, you're going to have to replace the shooting. I understand that he wasn't really shooting a whole lot. Or a whole lot efficient. He wasn't super efficient, in this series. But you cannot underestimate just the gravity that he creates by moving around. Like Davis Bertans this series, shot 34.8% from downtown, but it didn't feel like it. If you catch my drift, because you saw how people reacted to him when he ran around the 3-point line and all that. He is a guy who just demands a lot of attention. Now you look down the rest of the roster. Who can provide you that? Well, Bradley Beal really can't. He's shooting 20% from threes this series as well. Russell Westbrook also 20%. Rui Hachimura is more of an opportunistic scorer from three. He's not one who you can ask to hit threes up the dribble and like do all these kinds of crazy shot-making abilities. Is Smith also 20% from three? Howell Neto, 17. They don't have that guy. They don't have anyone who can create that level of gravity, so they need to be thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. Who is that? Is that Chandler Hutchinson? Probably Isaac Bonga, I guess.
Garrison Matthews?
Garrison Matthews. That would be hilarious. Yeah, I mean, sure, why not? Go crazy. You're not going to win this thing anyway. You're toast.
I hope you're right. I mean, I think the Sixers, after the game last night, all, like, to a man, basically said, the Embiid injury like threw us for a loop. We didn't play our game. Doc Rivers, criticized their shot selection, and said the ball was sticking. They were over dribbling. I think it speaks to the importance that not only of Embiid's scoring. Like, yes, you're missing 30 points, 10 rebounds a game, but he just makes the game so much easier for his teammates. For as much focus as there is with Jokic versus Embiid and the impact that Jokic makes offensively, the Sixers offense runs through Joel Embiid. There's no good answer for Joel Embiid. If you single cover him, he's going to destroy you, which is what he did in game three. If you throw doubles at him, which is what the Wizards mostly did in games one and two, he's okay. He's going to start. He's been vastly improved as a playmaker, and he's going to make passes to open teammates. And unlike last year when he was kicking it out to Al Horford and Josh Richardson, now he's kicking it out to Danny Green and Seth Curry, and I'm much more confident Tobias Harris, and those guys can hit those shots. So, and not to mention, he's drawing a league-leading number of free throws, getting bigs in foul trouble, so a lot runs through him. And if he is forced to miss time beyond this series, that's lights out for the Sixers title chances. I saw, on the FanDuel Sportsbook, I was curious how the odds would shift in the wake of Embiid's injury. They entered game four at a +700, which was tied for the Lakers for the fifth best odds to win the title. Right now, they're a +1,000, and I don't know if that update takes into account that Embiid is out doubtful for game five. So I think if we see that he's going to miss extended time, I think their odds are going to go, way higher than that.
Absolutely. But, this is why you need to sit him for the rest of this series.
Yeah. Oh, hopefully the series only goes one more game. And then, you buy him a couple days before. You
should almost hold two more, huh?
Well, you want to buy the team some rest before facing what looks like most likely a Hawks team that I think is much more dangerous than people are giving them credit for. The Hawks could beat them. The Hawks could hypothetically win either way. The Hawks are a legit threat to pull off an upset if Embiid misses time in that series.
I don't know if this is a hot take, but would it be an upset if Embiid didn't play? I would probably favor the Hawks in an Embiid-less series.
Yeah, I don't think that's a hot take either. I would be curious to see what odds makers' takes on it would be, but I bet it would be, yeah, I don't think there would be overwhelming odds either way, but I think, right. Yeah, I mean, it's fair to wonder if the if he was guaranteed to miss the entire series.
Yeah, that's, of course, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If he missed, yeah. If you knew that he missed all potential seven games,
yeah,
then I would favor Atlanta. Not substantially, but at least a bit.
Yeah. So let's wrap with just a comprehensive look now that we've gotten through all Chris Paul, Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic, Joel Embiid, Davis Bertans with respect to him, and Dante DiVincenzo also now out for the playoffs.
Damn it. Yeah.
How, if at all, have all of these injuries affected who you think is going to emerge from the playoffs as champion this year?
Well, I mean, longevity matters in terms of injuries, you know? I mean, if AD misses one game, that's not going to concern me for their title contentions whatsoever. Mm-hmm. If Embiid is back by the next round, that's not going to affect my opinion of where they stand. Luka is troubling. Like, that, he doesn't look right. If that is one of the primary causes that they lose in the first round, because they were we agreed they were on solid ground, and there is, I'm not going to say that they would have won game three or four or whatever if he had been 100% fully healthy, but it couldn't have hurt. If you had had a fully healthy Luka Doncic at the very start of game four, for example, where they got blown out, would that have changed that entire complexity of that game? Maybe. I don't know. So that one is one I would think is really a stinger, because you would want to see the best of him at least go up against the Clippers. DiVincenzo, however, that's a big loss.
Mm-hmm.
That is not something that should be taken lightly.
Yes, totally, totally agree. And I'm glad, I'm glad you have the same take there, because that's one of those ones where it's going to fly under the radar, especially given Luka, Chris Paul, Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid. But especially going against, you know, a Brooklyn Nets team where this is shaping up to be, very possibly this could be the best series of the playoffs. And this this series could end up deciding who wins the NBA title this year.
It could.
So going against that team, you know, downgrading from DiVincenzo to Pat Connaughton or Bryn Forbes, whoever they end up starting in DiVincenzo's place, it's not, you know, you're not losing Giannis, you're not losing Chris Middleton, but the role players matter too. And DiVincenzo was quietly very good for the Bucks this year.
He's in a full-time starter.
Right. So, you know, that especially when the margins are this thin going against a Nets team with KD, Kyrie, James Harden, like, you still have answers for those three guys with Middleton, Giannis, Drew. But now you have to figure out, okay, can Pat Connaughton keep up with Joe Harris, or can Bryn Forbes keep up with Joe Harris? Because if not, that might be the difference in that series.
I don't think so, honestly. And look, Dante, I know that he had modest numbers. Like, he was at, I think, 10 points, about 6 rebounds, but he was hitting 2 triples per game. That I know. Mm. He was also beginning to understand, like, the art of ball movement. He was not someone who was on the ball a whole lot because Drew, Chris, Giannis. But when he did get the ball, he made really nice reads. I mean, he would... You know what? I'm going to look it up right now. I think he was a pretty high assist man considering. Yeah. 3 assists per game in 27 and a half minutes. And many people would be like, 3 assists, that's nothing. He's getting that next to Drew, next to Chris, next to Giannis, as a guy who really isn't on the ball a whole lot. Mm-hmm. He's doing that. He's an outstanding rebounder. Yep, 5.8 rebounds per game. Again, 27 and a half minutes. These are the things that he does. He comes in, he does what you need him to do. And then he hits shots. He's a guy who, like, just is a perfect complementary player to all three of those guys. He's not just a great complementary to Giannis or Middleton or Drew. It's like the collectivity of it. Mm-hmm. He just fits into with that trio. So you downgrade significantly by going with Bryn or with Pat or with someone else. They spent 66 games with this guy in the starting lineup building chemistry. And now they have to work out something else. Huge, huge loss.
Yeah. So looking ahead to Bucks Nets, then, does that make you, I mean, we hadn't even previewed that series yet, but does it make you change your pick, or does it make you, you know, if you were leaning toward the Nets already, were you going to, are you now even more confident in them?
I was not leaning towards the Nets.
Oh, okay. Are you now?
No.
I'm still Bucks.
I'm still leaning Bucks, but I'm feeling less confident about it.
Okay. That's fair. What about the West? Who wins this wide open Western Conference if you had to pick right now?
Clippers.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, like, honestly, I was nervous when they were down 0-2. I thought, yeah, okay, you know what? That whole idea that we had about maybe this year it's actually Milwaukee and the Clippers, I thought that's gone. Maybe not. Maybe not. I still think Milwaukee can get there, though I wouldn't be shocked if the loss of DiVincenzo maybe proves a little bit too much. I don't know. Maybe there's a chance because they're still not that acclimated with one another in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's enough that a well-rounded Bucks team with a lot of chemistry and a lot of experience with one another, maybe that's enough. I don't know. But I wouldn't be shocked still if it's the Bucks and Clippers coming out of each conferences. I will say this, though. I will bring a caveat. I'll hedge my bet. If Davis is fully healthy, there are no lingering issues, if it's just like his knee got banged up for a couple days and then suddenly, oh, I'm perfectly fine again, that could change the picture.
Yeah. I pose that question to you because I have absolutely no idea.
Oh, I don't either. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, like, part of me wants to say Utah.
I wouldn't be shocked about Utah. I really wouldn't. I mean, if there's a team out there, it's funny because we spent a lot of time talking about the Bucks and the Nets, how those two teams could match up pretty fun towards each other. Like, that's a fun series, right? The Bucks are like the defensive versions of the Nets, and like the Clippers and the Jazz.
Yeah,
I feel have that similar dynamic in the West. Mm-hmm. Which could be really, really interesting to see. So if those two teams meet up, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and which could happen in the next round. Yeah. I mean, well, the Utah, it seems like, is pretty well on pace to close out the Grizzlies, but we'll see what happens in Clippers, Mavericks. And then, yeah, I mean, I feel like whichever team advances from Phoenix, Lakers is probably going to make the Western Conference Finals, with all due respect to the Blazers and Nuggets. I'd be picking either of those teams against either of Phoenix or Lakers, again, assuming healthy AD. But
I will give Denver the edge in a Phoenix series than I would Portland.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah,
specifically that series, because while I love DeAndre Ayton's defense, if he goes up against Jokic, oh boy.
Yeah, well, either way, it's shaping up. I mean, you said it well. Hopefully we get everyone healthy, but the injuries, like, in a morbid sense, have made this even more intriguing. This title picture feels more wide open than it was even at the start of the playoffs, when we already had no good idea about who was going to win this thing. So hopefully, knock on wood, we don't have any more major notable injuries and we don't have to have another episode like this in the playoffs, because these are a huge bummer. But we'll see. I mean, there's a real chance that what's transpired in this like first two-ish weeks of the playoffs is going to have a lasting impact on which teams actually advanced past the first round and deeper into the playoffs. And it sucks, but hopefully everyone can get as healthy as possible as soon as possible.
Agreed. And just to make it very, very painfully clear, I would always prefer player health towards our entertainment level.
Yes.
Brian, before, I know you're about to close this off, but before you do, I just wanted to reiterate to NBA fans who apparently go into arena and act like idiots. You're incredibly thick-headed morons if you do. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? I read about the whole Ja Morant situation in Utah as well. Like, some of the words that were used there, and it's just, man, Brian is so inexcusable. and that type of behavior. I'm so livid with this still. And the thing that bothers me the most is now it's become a game for fan bases. Like, there's a reason this is happening every night now. It's because there are some dude bros before the game going, "Oh, have you seen the news? Like, every fan is doing shit. Let's do the same thing." Like the guy last night in Washington.
Camp. Yeah.
Like he was when he was taken off the floor, he was doing all sorts of fist bombs or antics. Like, it was just attention grabbing. So now it's become a game by fans. So hey, let's see if we can get on the news. Let's see if we can act like complete idiots. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can ruin an NBA game and get on SportsCenter. The NBA needs to come down hard on this, much harder than the whole, "Yeah, you're getting a lifetime ban." No, you need to have a lifetime ban from every NBA arena.
Well, to Boston's credit, the Boston police arrested and charged the guy who threw the water bottle at Kyrie. And I forget who tweeted this, but apparently that charge in Utah carries a maximum like 10-year jail sentence. I don't think the guy's actually going to get it. I think it was Michael McCann of Sports Illustrated. I think he still writes there.
Okay.
I believe it was him who tweeted that. Don't hold me to that because I don't remember offhand. But yeah, I mean, I feel like that's kind of the line. Like, you need to just send a message that not only are you getting banned from arenas, you are facing prosecution.
Yeah.
And you are going to face major, serious legal consequences for your dumbassery. I will say the one injury that we forgot to talk about is Lucky the Leprechaun.
Yeah.
So thoughts and prayers to Lucky, who is suffering from facial abrasions,
courtesy
of Kyrie Irving's shoe. Yeah. However, despite that flagrant 3 foul from Kyrie, he did not disturb having a water bottle thrown at his head. It's a effing logo. Conflating the two is absurd, which I know a number of Boston area reporters did after that game. You are showing your entire ass if you do that.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I couldn't believe it. So in the early morning when I woke up yesterday, when I saw that whole thing had happened, I made a tweet about, you know, there's no way you can justify doing that. And the response into that tweet was like, who's justifying it? Like, there's no one who's justifying that behavior. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, in that same thread, fans came in like, well, I don't know if I'm justifying it, but he did do this thing with... No, like, already, stop. That you're heading in the wrong direction if you're going with the whole butt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a piece of plastic. And shout out to our buddy, Krishna Narsu, who in our DM thread on Twitter very carefully laid out for us that the fact that the Celtics logo does not have feelings. Thank you, Krishna. Yeah. That's much appreciated. I don't think I've ever laughed that hard, by the way. That was fantastic. You had so many Celtics fans coming out. That's not fair. I'm not trying to like paint Celtics fans as a unit, but like you had a whole lot of people coming out of the woodworks with this whole, well, the logo is history. It means, shut up. Like, what the hell? That doesn't matter. Do you know how dangerous it is to throw a full water bottle at someone with that speed? That's...
I want to make clear, too, that I don't think that one Boston fan represents all Celtics fans. Right. The one Sixers fan who dumped popcorn. Like, these are just individual idiots who do not reflect the larger fan base. Yes. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't other members of the fan base that would do similarly stupid things.
Right.
But, you know, I think, as a whole, most fan bases are pretty... Like, fine. We said it last episode. Like, if you want to taunt, like, I heard someone said, you know, in the Sixers-Wizards game, there was a Sixers fan calling Raul Neto a Philly reject because the Sixers had him last year. Like, that, cool. That is just good-natured taunting. Great. Throwing things at players or using racist terms against them, not cool. You deserve every bad thing that's coming to you. Stop doing it.
It also hasn't gone unnoticed, Brian, that everything that's happened has happened against black players.
Yeah.
And it has happened by... And the people who've done these things are white fans.
Mm.
We really should be talking more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that somber note, hopefully we do not have to talk about any more injuries or fan dumbassery in the next episode. We can get back to talking more playoffs. We'll have some Bye Felicias coming shortly, especially in the East, it seems. Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I promise to our listeners that next time around, it won't be, like you said, injuries and dumbassery from fans. We'll have David Ramil on. It'll be fun. We'll talk Bye Felicia with the Miami Heat and everything. It's going to be great. And Brian, also, I just wanted to, now that we're in the playoffs and like we've passed our 5-year mark, I also just wanted to say thank you to our listeners out there. I don't think we do that a whole enough. I mean,
yes,
you guys have been around for so long. You comment, you share. It's really super. Like, thank you for your support throughout the 5 years. It's been wonderful.
Yes. And again, apologies for the cicada plague. I promise it won't be like this forever.
Yeah. Brian's bug buddies will stop having sex very soon.